today are kind of a follow-up of three subjects that we discussed in the past. Those being deconstruction, legacy homeowner ordinance provision, ordinance exterior building materials, and then other potential ordinance revisions. I am going to ask that we move deconstruction to the end. We have invited MPC Director Melanie Wilson to join us on that discussion, and she is in another meeting and hopes to join us by the end of the hour. So if that is okay, Darren, we will move that item last.
That's fine with me.
Okay.
So you'll want to, you'll want to vote on it. And then adopt the agenda, obviously, because you moved an item. So yeah.
Great. Can we adopt the revised agenda?
We can adopt the revised agenda. You're welcome.
Okay, so then let's have the first thing we discuss be legacy homeowner ordinance provision.
Sorry to interrupt you again. Yes. You have to approve the meeting minutes.
Okay, let's do that.
I approve the meeting minutes, so I make a motion to, and I guess I'm saying it's okay, and is it okay with you?
I also vote yes, we approve the minutes. I actually have them in front of me. Great. Do we need to do anything else prior to discussion? Great.
Nope.
So regarding the legacy homeowner discussion, in reviewing everything for today, I felt the least confident on this subject of the three about next steps. So I know that, you know, in just as a little recap, the research showed that there aren't any communities that have strong policy or ordinance language about making exceptions for long-term homeowners. However, other communities do have recommendation documents and guidelines and pamphlets, as well as make their own staff and or board decisions based on a desire to have some leniency. So I'd love to have some direction as to how we should proceed.
Well, I think one of those things that we were looking at when we put this together was, or this whole subcommittee, was how we, the legacy for us as a commission and how we respond later on down the line with subsequent panel members. So in light of that, that we have other communities that have guidelines that are somewhat subjective but allow for a level of interpretation, how does that work for us when it, as a with staff, as far as putting something like that together? That would be my question to
you. Mean writing like a new ordinance or
well
something?
No, as it was, Rebecca said, there is no precedent with other communities that have that policy in place or an ordinance in place, but they have general guidelines that would circumvent that or allow some interpretation for subsequent Historic Preservation Commission boards to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And how would that look? And is that a possibility that we could have in there as far as our guidelines, or is that something that is not possible?
Hey.
Typically, you can't bind your next guidelines.
You
don't. So, if you put it in the ordinance, or your
what Pam's saying is that guidelines aren't binding. So, you know, they would just be recommendations.
Right.
So, policy is binding, isn't
your,
it?
Your policy.
A policy is binding, or an ordinance is binding.
So we could update the policy of the Historic Preservation Commission to allow for an interpretation by subsequent commissions to make an interpretation as far as legacy homeowners.
Is that how, I mean, you all don't have any policies right now?
Well, did we not discuss also special exceptions last time?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think there was some conversation about, could that be a location where, I think, but that could be wrong, but that seems like it could be quite a hurdle to add an additional clause to the special exceptions list.
I personally think that that is, and Pam, please chime in if you want to, that's probably the most logical place to start. Don't you think so?
Mm-hmm. But it would go all the way to council, right? Because it'd be like a text amendment.
Exactly, yeah. It's a text amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So it would go, you know, you would make a recommendation, which I would present at an MPC meeting. MPC will make a recommendation on the text amendment to city council.
Okay.
So any text amendment will work. A policy would just be adopted by this board, right?
It could be, but then the problem is if somebody were to challenge it, it's just a policy.
Right. So it's easily challenged.
And when you use the term policy, you don't mean changing the ordinance.
Correct.
Right.
I'll show you an example of some of the HTBR policies.
Great.
So HDBR has a few policies. I can remember where they are. Yeah, here, policies and interpretations under HDBR.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a site plan review policy. This one's very old, but let's show you a newer one. We have a masonry repointing policy, which, you know, requires, you know, a 4x4 patch, you know, that kind of thing. So they did it as a policy instead of trying to update the ordinance to add the requirement for the 4x4 test patch. There's an awning fabric policy, and this was basically like pre-approving fabrics and pre-disapproving fabrics. Documenting buildings policy. So this is a policy that tells you how you have to document a building if you're going to demolish it. Sample panel policy for new construction. So none of these things are in the ordinance.
So it seems to me maybe these things are bolstering what the staff would like to require as to how work is undertaken and products are selected and.
Well, so these ones are all initiated by the HGBR, not by staff. It was like, for example, when a really incompatible awning fabric was approved one time.
Mm.
The board said, we want an awning fabric person to come in and show us 30 fabrics. And we want to take that and determine which ones are compatible and incompatible and write a policy that we adopt. So staff wrote it based on what they mm-hmm. wanted. And then I presented it to them. They made a couple tweaks. I brought it back and they adopted it. So everything here was initiated by the board, not by staff.
Okay. But staff spent some time at their direction.
Absolutely. That's our job, is you all tell us what to do and we do it. And then you all tell us how to do it some more.
So in that respect, we could draft a policy and tweak it over a number of months that would give a semblance of interpretation for legacy homeowners.
Exactly. But like she said, it's very challengeable.
Well, yes.
But you could help us write it.
But the point being is
you could help them write the policy, right? The legacy homeowner. You want Melanie's here now. If you want it.
We reorganized our agenda, right? Yeah, so that.
Well, I guess let me first apologize. I think all meetings are, a lot of these things are very important. It's just that today was the perfect storm. I had an MPO meeting.
No, I have to apologize.
Dealing with redistricting and trying to address your concerns, which I think are very important. I will say that one of the things that from talking with Leah about what some of the things were that you wanted to look into is I can't strongly tell you enough or urge you enough. First, if you want policy change, because these are changes that have to be made to the zoning ordinance. And it's not just you saying, hey, we want to do this. This goes through a formal process, and usually I'm the one that would take it through that process. I would recommend that you pick one, like deconstruction. To me, that one is something that's really important. But I think that even with that, there needs to be more discussion about what that means to some of the historic districts. Some of the districts don't have people with a lot of wealth that live in them. And in some cases, the cost of going through a deconstruction process could be prohibitive to them. I know that, you know, you could make the argument, well, that they probably wouldn't have to pay or whatever, and that may or may not be the case. But I do think that we need to have some serious conversation, maybe survey and look at some of those areas where, you know, you might want to have it imposed on everything. So that's one, but I'm a big proponent of deconstruction and recycling. I mean, my whole place is down here is done with, you know, second or just to make sure that I'm not having anything go into the landfill if I don't have to. But that's something that needs to happen, and it takes some time. I will also let you know that one of the things that I did do, in case you don't know, is I got to talk with the city manager the end of last year after the church got demolished that nobody knew about. And I told them that we really needed to be part of the application process for demolition so that we get an opportunity to look at it, and we put a date on it. So anything I think that's pre either 1950, they would have to send through to us to do a review on before they just move forward with demolition. And if it was something that I did not feel comfortable with, because I do discuss all of these recommendations with staff before they come forward to you, so you might not see me all the time, but I'm always there. Then we could say we don't agree with this, and you need to go through a deconstruction process. Mm-hmm. So I have put that in place, and they have amended. They're amending their applications to reflect that. So to me, that's a big win, because there's just been too many properties that have been coming down without any notice even to us about the fact that they're being demolished. So that was huge. But I do think that if you want to do the construction, we need to spend a little bit more time looking at where that should fully apply.
I completely agree. That's focusing on one at a time rather than trying to tackle a number of things. Although the economic, the legacy thing, I think we can have pointing to your point, even some wording in that policy, because obviously there are folks that can't afford to do deconstruction.
I'm sorry, you threw me off with the accent. I love it, but I have to get adjusted to it. Go ahead.
So part of the legacy ownership is ties into that, the way we were just discussing before we kind of jumped to deconstruction, is there are elements we recognize that there are people in the community that can't afford to do improvements or even do a sympathetic demolition because of finances. And we want to put that into a lot of, and recognize that in a lot of our policies or our recommendations moving forward, that there's certain elements that we understand that are in there, or as we draft it with the deconstruction policy, how do we access for low-income folks who are having the place taken down? How do we still get access to have that place salvaged?
Well, one of the things that I would suggest, and when you start having a policy discussion versus a guidance discussion, when you're doing policy, that's a whole different ballgame. That's why I said that goes into usually an ordinance to be able to be implemented. If there, and the other option I was going to bring to your attention is, the other option is to have something that is guidance. And guidance is a little bit different in that it gives you some flexibility so that you can say guidance is when these circumstances happen, this is really what should be done. Now, does it mean that it has to be done?
Right.
Totally no, but it's the beginning at a minimum of setting the policy. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just, it gives you some time to get into the nitty gritty of those areas where you know that you're going to have, you know, an impact that you don't, an adverse impact. So one is guidance, which might be some things that we do for some of these things. And then the other is policy. Mm-hmm. The deconstruction, as I said, that one is one that's kind of low hanging fruit because I've already got them to change their applications, which was big to get them to go through that. There could be guidance, though, that could be done pretty quick on this is what needs to be looked at, or this is what we recommend should be reviewed when doing the demolition application. If somebody has enough money to apply to get something demolished, usually they may have enough money to at least have somebody come in to deal with doing some, you know, deconstruction of it. In some cases, though, the city might be the ones that are doing the demolition, and they don't think about doing
right.
That. That's kind of why we actually started with this policy, was because of city ordered demolitions, and we're not kind of following through with some of the things that we hold dear as far as the city's concerned.
Well, and that's why I had that put on the application. Just having the review on the application really takes care of a lot, because when the city goes through demolition, they still go through kind of a process. We're not, you know, they have to get a COA, then that's a trigger that says you have to have a COA before you start doing demolition. The way that the systems have been set up, I mean, I'm all about looking at, let's look at processes, let's look at what they're looking at, why is it that they're having such a hard time following what even conditions that you might put on properties. And I think it's how things are put into their system. So when the building inspector goes out, he may not have the conditions that have been recommended by this board or by the landmark district. They just have the basic building code, and when they go out, that's what they're kind of looking at. So I've talked to them about, how about having an area, I did this in other communities, where if something's located in a historic, well, in a historic district, there's a drop down that has what the conditions are that that building inspector needs to be looking at, and that we usually look at when they're trying to get their certificate of occupancy. That by itself is going to help. The legacy, I think that's great. But again, I think that if we deal with guidance, I think that we should also have a conversation about talking with housing and community development. And I don't have a problem setting up a meeting with them. How do you fund that from the standpoint of people in those low wealth areas that might need some assistance?
Right.
If there's a way to get a fraction or a little bit of funds, even if it's, you know, something minor, maybe anybody doing development or deconstruction has $10 of that money go into a pool to help somebody in an area that doesn't have the resources. I'm all about, I don't believe in having plans or policies that cannot be implemented.
Right.
And I think that we have to think about it holistically from the beginning to how it gets done.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things. Robin Williams has joined the meeting, I believe. So thank you, Robin. And
hello.
Hey, Robin.
Hi, Dr. Williams.
How are you?
All right. Hanging in there.
Good. I've been here for the past 5 minutes, so I've been hearing what you were saying. So I didn't know when you guys started, but.
We started at 1:15, but, you know, happy to have you now. It's no problem.
I thought the meeting started at 1:30. Was it 1:15?
We started at 1.
The subcommittee.
Oh, sorry. I had it 1:30 in my calendar. My apologies.
It's okay. So a couple of things, and Robin, we want to hear your thoughts too, but I just wanted to say, you know, I think your idea of let's champion one thing and try to put that to the top of the list and get your support, I think makes a lot of sense. I did want to say, and you know, a big reason why we wanted to even meet today, so a lot of the conversation around deconstruction has actually trickled even outside of the historic ordinance and what would be the purview of this group. And I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, there's other interested parties even in the community that are meeting and having conversations about this very thing. And so, you know, we said, does it make sense to have a larger technical group get together that includes representatives, like we want to include HGBR, for example, and the Office of Sustainability, code enforcement, other folks, so that the best possible, you know, way to attack this is undertaken, and that it would probably, it seems anyway at this time, be a separate ordinance, like a separate city standalone ordinance. And so before we ventured outside of our, you know, HPC subcommittee to even be a representative of HPC, and this is where we would need to have the legalities all ironed out about, you know.
Yes, and I think that, again, you all need to be very careful with regards to lanes as far as moving forward with this project. I can't stress to you how important it is that we got them to put dates on things that we review. I didn't say it had to be in a historic district. So people that live in older neighborhoods that have homes or buildings that were built, what was the date that we put on there? Was it 1950 or?
50 years.
Yeah, 50, so. That 50 years would have to come in. So I've got that. That gives you the ability, it gives us the ability to know what is happening, whether it's in the historic district or not.
Mm-hmm. And they, and
so
they,
that, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm just going to say, and they have, and they have been doing that. That was huge. And I, mm-hmm. I kind of had multiple conversations to make sure that that happened. So we've already got a tool that lets us know about what's going on citywide. And that's why I suggested that, that for a few of these things, because I do have that on there, we might focus on also dealing with guidance. Because in those areas that are outside of a historic district, we can still have recommended guidance on what to do if they're coming in for demolition. That gives us the, I mean, that's a better way to get to kind of ease into this versus doing a, another committee where you're going to end up having either pushback from, you know, some of the other departments based on workloads and some other things. So I think that, and this is just my opinion you're asking, I think that from a standpoint of getting something implemented, by having them send us that stuff with the 50 years on it, huge. And
absolutely.
By you all working on looking at for areas that are not in the district, you know, champion one thing, but also have guidance. Mm-hmm. Guidance can be done quick.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's low-hanging fruit and gives you a win. And it also helps with those properties that are not located in the historic district. Like that church wasn't located in a district. That's right.
Right.
It was not located in any districts, but if we had guidance and we had gotten a copy of the permit, we might have been able to do something. So again, I'm
right.
strategically thinking about where you're going to have the most impact faster.
And I, you should say thank you, because that is a huge win to be able to have the demolition applications for buildings pre-1950 come this way first. That's a really big step. 72? Are we doing 50 years?
Years?
Okay.
50 years.
Okay. I thought I heard you say 1950 earlier.
Well, initially, well, there was 50. When I started out, I started, you know, I'm always about negotiating.
2020.
You know, I started out at like, you know, they started out a higher number. I always counteract very low, you know, so you come to a point in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically ended up with 50 years.
Gotcha. Okay, great.
Which
72.
To me was huge. And
yeah.
It really does. It really was important to get that, because it does what you all are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why if there is a guidance document, I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't discuss the policy piece, but that's a little bit different ballgame. A guidance document, I can move forward quicker from the standpoint.
And a guidance document will outline a policy further down the road.
That's
and
right.
That's exactly what we want to do.
That's right.
Okay.
So I think, and this is, you know, maybe a heads up, right, that this conversation, like I said, I mentioned there's people that are not part of HPC, and it's brewing, right? So it's, I mean, as far as like us being involved as citizens, you know, maybe it's not HPC linked, right? That I think a city ordinance is coming. It's coming down, the train is moving, and that's, you know, not because of anything that we have discussed. I think there just has been overlap interest in this group about it. So perhaps we champion this, you know, and I want to define legacy homeowner initiative. So, and that's something that we need to do as a group as well, is have a proper definition, because we were, you know, is it 15 years? You know, how long do we say?
And I do think that, you know, the other thing too is that it is really important to have definitions mm-hmm. of what it is that you're talking about, and that's crucial. But again, I think that based on the resources that we've got and based on actually having an impact, you kind of have to figure out what do you do first. And the fact that we've got opportunity to have those permits to look at it having some guidance is low-hanging fruit that gives you a win. It gives us an opportunity to go and talk with the people in the community, because now they know, hey, if it's before 1972, we're looking at guidance. You could talk with them. We could have some meetings to talk with them about what that looks like.
And we're even saying we want to make concessions for design choices for folks that have either lived in their home for a long time. So, you know, defining as it 15 years is 20 years. And maybe that's not even defined. You know, I think the question is, there was some question about the legality of being able to do that, but.
Well, and that's the other issue too. That becomes kind of somewhat problematic, especially in areas that have not gone through being part of a historic district. But the whole city of Savannah can't be in a historic district because, you know, it just can't. That's not, you know, that's not
historic. No, and we're talking about existing districts. I think there's been a lot of consternation about, you know, I can't afford to make these in-kind replacement, like I have a metal roof, it's deteriorated, and you want me to go back with a new metal roof. Why can't we say shingles are also permitted in the district? And maybe in this instance, we say we make an accommodation for this legacy homeowner, whatever term we use, and that becomes kind of a special exception.
Well, I think that that's why I said this isn't, when you start looking at dealing with the policy piece, that's why it takes some time to do it correctly. I mean, I'm all about if you're going to move something, you're going to do something that I know I can get through, because then it becomes me moving it through to city and the elected officials. By at least having the demolition piece, having some guidance, and there's nothing wrong with even doing an amendment to the current ordinance that addresses that situation where you've got somebody that has a metal roof. Somebody might have been able to put in, an architectural roof across the street, but because they now are in a district, they're wanting to know why they were able to do it and these other people weren't able to do it. Well, that's where, you know, we can have another conversation. We can talk about where in the ordinance can I amend to take care of those little things. That's pretty straightforward, and we can get that done, to me, a lot faster than dealing with this bigger, you know, kind of global piece of trying to do something citywide. That can
be right before you came in. We had landed on a discussion about editing a special exception clause. You know, like, is there some other language in the special exception requirements that could speak to either long-term homeownership or income? Or
I think that that's where, if you had to do something and you were talking about quote unquote legacy homeownership, we'd have to define that if that's what it is. But I get a little, to be candid with you, I get a little nervous when you start having those conversations, because, you know, who's to say that you still got the same person that's in there? They might not.
Yeah, there's a lot of loopholes, right?
There's too many loopholes. I think that it's cleaner when you have in the districts, when you've got very clear kind of guidelines that say, if you're in a district that, and then there will be some type of review or survey. We can go out and look at what contextually is out there. And if everybody around them has some type of architectural shingle and their roof is leaking and they've got all kinds of problems and they don't have the resources and they have something that's comparable, then that's where we can put some language in there that says you have a right on a case by case to look at it contextually with what's around it to decide whether to accept that or not. That's a lot cleaner, because, you know, it's something that's tangible, because you can kind of go out and show this visually is what's there. You can talk to the homeowner from the standpoint of, you know, is it somebody that's been there for a long time or not? Even if they've not been there and they spent all their money buying the house and they don't have, you know, the roof might have been okay when they purchased it, but, you know, it's been, you know, a year and they now have this $30,000 repair that they've got to do or replacement they've got to do. It's not something that we're going to solve right here, but think about it from that standpoint of looking at what is around.
Yeah, and I think the visual compatibility factors give us that that leniency as well.
It does, but in some ways it does not. We had a case where that's very, that I was telling you happened. And it was not something that was covered under that. That's why I said there are a couple cases that we run into where if we've got a little bit more clarification, it gives you what you're kind of wanting to get with the legacy piece. But at least it's a little bit more defined in the districts that you're in. It warrants further discussion. I don't have solutions. It's just kind of thinking about what I've seen since I've been sure. here. But I do know that I think that's really important. You can even have something that says if you're an elderly person and you're in your home, that's fine. Let's quantify it. And you need help with whatever, that there can be some special exception. There's different ways to handle that.
So elderly or somebody who's with confirmed disabilities or something like that.
It could be something along those lines. And that's why I said that it would be good to see if there's a way to even, if that's the case, see if there's a way to tie it into, see if housing community development might have resources. Because a lot of these areas are in, technically they're still kind of in urban redevelopment areas because you're still dealing with that in a core. So there's different funds that they got that can be used for some stuff. So they
EOA has some, or they did have some a number of years ago. I'm not quite as up to date on what they have.
Right.
But so, working with those other community partners.
Right. That's why I said that might be a way to deal with still addressing the legacy piece, but having a little bit more quantifiable about what the conditions are that trigger that. But in the meantime, for these other folks that are in situations where they've either purchased and they don't have any money to deal with doing a metal roof, but they've got monies to do an architectural.
I think I have less heartburn about that. It's like, being aware of what you're purchasing it, and being, and I don't get me wrong. I have sympathy for folks who did not know that they were buying in a historic district, but it's fairly well known where the districts are, there are a handful of people that don't know.
In this case though, Rebecca, seriously, in this case, the person did know, but I think what happened again was they saw what was around them.
Yeah.
So they assume, don't mean that the assumption, trust me, I went through a lot of back and forth with this person to get, and we worked to find someone that would deal with helping him deal with this replacement. But he basically made the assumption, he knew he was in a historic district and he was very excited about being there. It was the roof and what he saw around him that created the situation that he was in. It's something that we can talk about. It's something that's really important, but I'm about what is the low hanging fruit that gets you guys moving forward on something.
I just want to, since he's not here, say, Dr. Williams, do you have anything to ask or say?
Well, I think moving through a guidance to a policy to an ordinance has been done. That kind of step-by-step process has been done for other things, and it seems like it's a great way to test drive. So a guidance could bring to light issues that might help inform a policy, and then of course, as you enact a policy, which is non-binding but is a little more, I guess, regulatory in spirit than guidance. So it sounds Ms. Wilson's advice of going that route sounds really sound. And as for the legacy homeowners, that is such a thorny issue. So I guess anything that provides sort of a general guidance without, I don't know whether it's better to be sort of have an umbrella and leave the specifics up to a case-by-case review rather than try to imagine every scenario and build it into guidance or a policy.
And I think that's where the special exception, like if there's like a general sentence that tries to cover all, I don't know if there is, maybe I'm being too optimistic.
But the problem with this, the challenge is that when it comes to special exceptions, there has to be criteria that throws it into a special exception category. And then the other thing that you got to think about is the people that you're trying to help, they don't even have representation to know that they can even apply for a special exception.
Right.
So when they come here, if they figure it out,
There has to be an education piece without question.
Yeah, a deer in headlights trying to go through that process. So, I mean, I think that it doesn't mean that we can't have it. Maybe it's the second thing that we attack, like, and we could do some minor amendments to take care of the first couple of things. That, to me, that's a win, just dealing with the deconstruction and having guidance for the other properties that are outside of the historic district. And let's have some more conversation about how we can better tackle the legacy or that piece, because that would be one of my concerns, is that you would have, even if you had that one sentence, you still would have people that.
Oh, for sure. Staff would have to be relaying the information, like, would you like to apply for a special exception? You know, because it's what you hear.
We do, but what I'm trying to get you to understand is that now that we've got some additional people that are in historic districts, even if they hear it, and we talk to people, we do Zoom calls with people. We even have gone out to people's houses and say, this is what needs to happen. If you are a person that, you know, has a day job and you've got stuff, you're not thinking about what that impact is. You're just kind of smiling and saying, thank you very much. You know, you're thinking, well, this is a lot, I can't get through this, or that you're going to have to hire somebody to do it for you. And it takes education, and we will continue to do that. And we could probably go out and do even more if this becomes something that everybody wants to advocate for. But I do think that we need to be careful that one sentence is not a catch-all in order to make sure that we're capturing everybody. That's why having some good definitions and having some things that would allow us to just trigger an approval based on these standards, to me, is more helpful than putting the onus on them to apply for it. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Yeah, in the last couple minutes, we have one other topic. So,
okay,
you know,
no problem.
Stick around if you like.
I was going to say, is there anything that you need?
Another thing on our agenda today is ordinance exterior building materials, and
specifically related to stucco. So there has not been an enforcement of the definition as written of stucco over masonry. And I have given the subcommittee some homework. I pulled International Stucco Institute, or some organization like that, has educational documents about the different types of stucco, different types of stucco in different climates, and that we are in the most moist climate and are lumped in with Florida in that way. And I wanted to confirm what I saw in the documents, which was that the best stucco for weathering in this climate is stucco over masonry. So did you all have a chance to review that?
Yeah, I looked at it. And when we looked at it, it was in our policy here with the city. That's our recommendation, that it's stucco over masonry. Yet we've had a number of developments that have been approved that aren't that case. So they're not stucco over masonry.
Okay, so that actually can be a pretty straightforward fix. If that is something that is a concern, what we can do is we can do an ordinance amendment. We can put in the zoning ordinance, and basically in the definition section that says stucco is defined as stucco over masonry per that document. Mm-hmm. So, and we can have it tied to that document. So if there's any changes, it will always be consistent with what the recommendations are for appropriate stucco, so that it would hold up. The stucco people are always at the planning conferences, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So I know the different.
I mean, discoloration of stucco in Savannah is a real problem.
It's terrible. Things go pink real quick, as I say, or salmon, or, you know, it's just
black
or green
and gray.
Or they end up with these black streaks. So I agree with you all. I was kind of surprised that there wasn't a little bit more concrete definition of what stucco is, because it is in other places that I've worked in.
There actually is. It just hasn't been enforced.
Right. So it says true stucco in the overlay. But then when you go to the definition of true stucco is very weak.
Yeah, and
so
that's why I said that
strength,
would strengthen the
definition of true stucco through a very small text amendment.
Yeah, and that's something that I can definitely support, and it would not take that very long to do.
Fantastic.
So at this stage, Leah, what would you need from this subcommittee to support you? The document
that you talked about,
uh-huh.
I would just need that information.
Okay.
Then I could write up a proposed amendment.
So,
yeah. What she will do is she'll write up the amendment. I'll deal with reviewing it, make sure everything is copacetic. One of the things I will tell you is I do like referencing the professional standard, because that way you don't have to keep going back to amend the ordinance.
Yeah.
But it is something that we can do pretty quickly. We could have it probably for your next meeting, and have it be something that's blessed by that. And then it goes to MPC, the board meeting, as an amendment to the ordinance. And from there, it will go to the city council for recommendation. So that's the process.
So we would approve it, and then we put it to our commission, and then it would go to MPC.
Yes, that's correct.
You would recommend, right. So you would recommend approval. We would apply for the text amendment. MPC would make a recommendation to city council.
Yes.
And so the staff would recommend
just FYI with HDBR, so that they know, aren't aware, or so that they are aware of the definition, because we will all have a new capacity of ensuring that the drawings.
What we will do is, because I don't like having all these different definitions, basically, stucco is stucco. The requirement is the requirement with regards to what will hold up in this climate. So I try to make sure that the definitions are consistent when it comes to types of material, and so that if it's the same in HPC, it's the same in HDBR too.
And this will be the same citywide as well.
This would be the same citywide if we do the amendment as I'm proposing. So it will not, that's why I said it would go in the definition section. It wouldn't just go in the historic preservation
overarching
section.
Definition.
It'll be an overarching definition of what this means and what the reference point is. And again, we would write the ordinance up, we'd send it to you. It would be a staff, we would have it be a MPC, HPC or actually MPC staff initiated ordinance. It's the way that kind of comes through on their behalf. And then it's presented to the MPC board. Both of you or people can come and give comments about why this is important. They make their decisions, and then it goes to city, to the city. So fortunate for you all, I make recommendations on both. So.
Well, great.
I have a question.
Hmm?
Yeah. I was just going to ask, is true stucco lime-based, or can Portland cement-based stucco?
Yeah.
Because it's Portland cement can be highly destructive depending on, like, Savannah Gray bricks are softer than the cement, and that can be quite destructive. So should there be some distinction?
Portland cement is already not allowed on historic buildings per the ordinance. So this, it would be, Portland cement will be allowed on new construction, but not historic buildings. And that's already ingrained in the ordinance.
Okay, good.
So, Yeah.
And that would be clarified as well, because I believe when you have a definition like this, where you say, this is not allowed, and you say what it is that does not constitute true stucco when it comes to projects that are located in the district. And we can do that exception again in the definition. So I think that will help take care of a lot of that.
And just like EFIS is called out as, not.
That's correct.
Right. And true stucco was only referenced in the ordinance under the new construction standards. So that wouldn't even automatically doesn't apply to historic buildings.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll go in.
It has its own definition.
It does, but we have to, that's why I said we have to look through, make sure with staff, we will look through the whole document. So when that's referenced, we're taking care of it through the whole ordinance, because that's the right way to do it. And that way it lines up with, because even with the new construction, you still have the same problem. Ultimately, it doesn't.
Yeah, and that's actually the greater concern.
And that's the biggest concern.
Yeah.
So that's why I would make sure that it's there, that we even have some discussion about it being on new construction, which I think is a valid, but that's not something that's in your purview. It's something that we can discuss about whether we think that it should be allowed on new construction. based on the you know, the fact.
Well, and I think we can, we are.
Come across this when it's been new construction in the district.
Right.
And that's what's drawn the attention of the commission. It's like, this is not appropriate construction materials. And thankfully to Rebecca with her diligence of really pushing that point, we've discovered that it actually, the ordinance really isn't being applied to its idea in the first place. So I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So we will, so again, once we do it, we will send it out and give you all plenty of time to do a review. And you know, I appreciate you giving me time to answer
for joining us.
And, we appreciate you giving us some time to discuss it.
Anytime you've got or anything specific, like I said, I talk with staff daily, sometimes at length with Leah, multiple times a day. But you know, if there's something that you're thinking about doing, just remember it's got to be done incrementally. And you know, I'm gonna always try to figure out how we can get it done without stepping on others' toes.
Yeah, sure.
That we could have a win. So thank you all, and y'all have a great day. And I've got to run back to my redistricting meeting. So
okay.
Thank you,
Ms. Wilson. I'll do a call for other business. Anyone? Okay, it is now 2:02, so I will ask for someone to call adjournment. Wait, okay.
Yeah. Other business, if you all can discuss your next date.
Oh, sure. So we have, I did look and we did meet at 1 last time. So
my apologies on that. I had it in my mind and in my mental calendar as opposed to my physical electronic calendar. Mentally, I was thinking, oh, it's an hour before the pre-meeting, and that's how I, so yeah, apologies. Yeah. I've had a busy week and it's just, I wasn't very attentive.
Don't need to apologize. You're human, just like all of us. It's okay.
So anyway, 1 o'clock, I noticed we did meet at 1 the last time, so 1 o'clock's fine.
So it's actually the same date next month as well. The 23rd is when, Leah, I'm looking at you for confirmation. So can we meet at 1 p.m. on March 23rd?
I approve that. What do you say, Robin?
Yep, that sounds fine.
Great.
Fantastic.
Can I have someone call for adjournment?
I motion to adjourn the subcommittee meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission.
And I'll second that.
Thanks, everyone. See you in 30 minutes.
Sure thing.